didn't get a blower. Jen just blowing me in the face.
Hooray! It's a double celebration. It's 100 movie banters. Hooray! And also, we survived the London riots. We're broadcasting from the one remaining building in London.
And, we're not dead.
Because since the last, I think we've had two podcasts go out since, well no, one podcast go out since then, but that was recorded. Yeah. It's no, the first one recorded since.
Was it last weekend?
My house is burnt down.
I can't remember. Yeah.
All I have Paul's remaining is this blower.
Paul's very happy about that.
Yeah, no, it's nice to be here.
Yeah.
It is nice to be alive.
Here. Yeah. It is.
It's particularly nice to be here.
That's true. We've changed, we've moved studio.
Oh, we have.
We're now in Studio B.
We are.
Studio J.
Studio J, yes. Mm. Although that doesn't help, could be yours or mine.
That's true.
Studio J.
Jim.
Studio Gemma.
Gemma Artisan.
Wow, we've got there so soon.
Yep. We're waking up, that's why.
I've actually brought, especially because it's our 100th episode, Empire magazine, which has a large interview with Gemma Arterton, which I thought I'd quote from.
Oh, nice.
Basically, whenever Jen's speaking, I'll speak over you with some words of Gemma Arterton.
I feel so loved.
Oh.
You can't find anything.
No. Oh, wait a minute. Hang on a second. I'll find something. I'll do it when you're least expecting it. You know.
Just make something up.
It's good. It feels like where I belong. I trained in theatre, and it's what I always thought I'd do. There you go. Go on, try and finish another sentence. See what happens.
That could be entirely something.
I think Gemma Arterton's a lovely
person. Always very practical people. Hang on, that's not a sentence. I'll turn the page. Sorry. I'll forget it. It's not working.
We've got the gist.
You're also
about to headbutt the microphone.
Oh dear. Don't know.
We've got a slightly jury-rigged situation, but it's all going all right, I think. Except all this is about to go.
Is it going to go right now?
No, it's fine. No, it's taped at the back.
Okay, yeah, fine.
The microphone's a little bit droopy.
I forgot the mic stands. So in moving to Studio J, we've now just taped microphones around the room.
But it's fine.
Like the world's crappiest spy film. They've never noticed. I've wired the room.
Yeah. Anyone seen Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels? When the guy's head smashes through the cupboard and he finds himself staring at a massive array of microphones and tape machines, it kind of looks like that after the smashing through the cupboard.
Have you seen that trailer for Tinker Soldier Butcher the Baker, the Counselor Baker?
Tinker Taylor Soldier Spy.
It looks good, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes!
Very good cast.
Yeah. From a retro.
In fact, that was the trailer that I saw immediately before I saw the trailer for Conan the Barbarian. That's the one where I went, do you know what? Conan's not for me.
You want to see a bit of the Firthster, don't you?
With a
bit of Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone loves a bit of Cumberbatch.
That's
his catchphrase. That's what
he every room he enters.
Oh, yeah. That's what he really sounds like. He's such a good actor, he hides it normally.
Yeah, worst impression ever.
Thank you.
So yes, welcome.
Welcome. I'm Paul Carenza, by the way.
You must have listened to the previous 99, so you need no instructions.
In fact, if you haven't listened to them all, I think you should go back and listen to them.
Oh, yeah,
because this will get you up to date.
This will make no sense. You won't follow the plot at all.
Go back and walk.
You won't know what's going on.
Oh, and I'm Jennifer Masters. Hello.
And I'm John Sands.
Yes.
Yes, but you knew all that, of course.
Of course
you've been
you
with
did.
Us through it thick and thin.
We're friends.
I would mean Jen and Paul.
Oh, John, who's thick, who's thin?
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Work out for ourselves.
You decided, and that'll be fun.
Thanks. So this exciting week, we're going to talk about some films as well, aren't we? We're going to
No, not those.
Rise of Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Captain America.
Yep. And The Devil's Double.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. So it's quite action-y.
I did think, though, I thought as a special 100th anniversary, we've been talking for ages, what should we do that's special?
Paul has removed a bit of paper.
No, I haven't. I haven't removed anything. This is all from... No, because I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I could, as a special tribute to our 100th episode, crowbar in 100 films into the first... minute or so.
Go on then.
Of the episode. I don't think it's possible.
100 films into a
minute.
I don't
think you can.
Well, I all I got to do is just say anything, but in doing so mention, 100.
I think that's
the full Monty. The Big Lebowski, it definitely might work.
Nice.
So come on, into the wild. Don't look now. Watch, men. I'll show girls. That was a rocky start. Now, now I know fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But I'm going the whole 9 yards. The whole 10 yards, no, in fact. It's going to be the godfather of all Schindler's lists. big. It's big. Oh, a big list. Big. Right, film,
yeah.
Big.
Yeah.
And it should be easy. Eh? As pie. Easy Rider. The big easy. Easy virtue. Earth girls are easy. No offence to you. I mean, there you are, the girl with the dragon tattoo, a pretty woman, funny girl, a babe, monster-in-law. You're thinking, get smart, enough funny games, gingerbread man. Look at us, the three amigos, the good, the bad and the ugly, the three musketeers. The good girl, a psycho, and the boy with striped pyjamas. American Beauty, old boy, the elephant man. The lion, the witch and the wardrobe, Rita, Sue and Bob too. The man with the golden gun, the man who shot Liberty Valance, and a woman under the influence. Paul, Jennifer's body, and the third man. Two girls, a guy in a pizza place. 12 angry men, divided by 6, plus a woman. The usual suspects, the good fellas. Now, since our inception, we've found something to talk about, and 28 weeks later, we're wondering, oh brother, where art thou? Well, something's got to give. Now, I know what you're thinking. Are we there yet? Have we got vertigo?
Vertigo.
Are the city lights out of sight? Candyman do it. Or is there Fargo?
Nice.
Fargo. Vertigo. Fargo. Well, almost, famous. I've got the sixth sense. You want to give me das Boot. You're thinking, stop or my mum will shoot. Quiet man. The quiet man, that is. Go! Well, I can't go.
Nice.
Can't go. It's irreversible. Getting closer. I've gone overboard, I know. I've fallen. Crash! Crash! Two different crashes. This isn't wanted. I doubt I've made a splash. Made, as well as a splash. The thing is, it's networking. I've taken 6 days and 7 nights to do this, knowing it's my downfall. If I'm unforgiven, then my cousin Vinny's a clueless, notorious ghost. Seven to go. I'll speed up. You know my favourite films? The Cook, the Thief, the Wife and Her Lover, Sex Life of the Potato Men, and, oh, well, I've had enough of the crowbarring. That's it. It was the last one. Well, I should have been working.
Wow. That,
to be
honest. Oh, that's incredible.
That was impressive.
I think we should put that online.
That was, I hasten to add, inspired by The Bugle.
Yes,
Andy Zaltzman's notorious pun list. So if you haven't heard The Bugle, have a listen.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Except the difference is there, Bill. His co-host normally falls further and further into despair as he gets through it. Whereas we were loving that.
If I did that every week, you too would fall further and further into despair.
That is a fair point.
Yeah. My face hurts. That was
brilliant. That was tremendous.
Lovely. Well, I'm going to sit
time
down
well
now.
Spent.
You can carry on and talk about... Well, actually, I haven't seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes, so you guys will have to take the lead off that
fair
one.
Fair enough.
We'll let rip on the monkeys then.
Yeah. So to be. It does sound like it's a known saying, doesn't
exactly.
it? You're going to go and
let rip on the monkeys.
Let rip on the monkeys.
Yes.
Go on, you start.
Oh, fair enough. I think Jen's exhausted. Yeah, this is the sort of prequel slash reboot of the Planet of the Apes series. Mm-hmm. I haven't even seen the original. I've seen bits of it.
I've seen the original, I've seen the chocolate.
But never properly.
Get your hands off
you. I've seen most of that one, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've seen enough of it over the years that I feel I've seen it, but not properly. This is a sort of prequel to that, but also a reboot, so it's not part of the existing continuity, while acknowledging certain bits of it. But it's also a setup to it, so it's how everything happens.
So it's not, is it not related to the Tim Burton one then, is it?
No,
that's
only way it might, because I don't know the original.
What happened to the Tim Burton one?
All I remember is there was Mark Wahlberg and an Abraham Lincoln thing.
You are at the end.
The Lincoln Memorial.
He returns to Earth,
oh,
but
right.
It's all suddenly
it's
apes,
all right, it's
which
oh,
makes
so it's
no
not
sense.
Actually, so it's the different planet?
I think in the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, they launch a spacecraft, which sort of gets caught in a wormhole-y thing, and they're orbiting around a new planet.
Mm.
And I think they sort of send some apes, something like they send some apes down, and then a weird thing happens, and then they crash land. And it turns out the weird thing happening was them being caught in some time distortion in which thousands of years have passed.
Right.
Yeah. Or billions of years have passed. So the apes that crash-landed earlier, you know, half an hour earlier by their time, have now all evolved into apes, and so they capture the humans and hilarity ensues.
Seems a little lost in space to me.
Yes. Yeah. I love Tim Burton, but I defend him in this case by saying he said it was the most interference he's ever had from a film studio.
I think we gladly acknowledge that the original Planet of the Apes films, of which there's five, I think Conquest of and Return of and all that stuff, those five and this one, Rise of the, kind of fit together. Right. Tim Burton one,
no,
it was maybe
remove
that.
It was always pictures like a reimagining thing. But I can't remember the name of the spacecraft. The name of the spacecraft in the Tim Burton one, I can't remember. Or indeed the original. Because in this, they sort of half mention, you occasionally see a couple of news broadcasts about, a spaceship is launching, and yet we're going to somewhere. So I think that's meant to imply the equivalent of the original Planet of the Apes films with an astronaut launching. So sort of that mission is kind of going on while all the events of this film are happening.
Right.
So possibly setting up where someone comes up, maybe.
Who knows?
But it's its own thing, anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a different origin, because I think in one of the fourth films, they travel back in time and talk about, we see a prequel to what happened, and it's completely different from this. So this is its own thing.
Right.
But the main star of this are the apes themselves, rather than people in monkey costumes.
Mm. Yes.
It is Andy Serkis being motion captured brilliantly. Yes.
Again.
As Caesar, isn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. No laurel wreath. No tins of dog food. But yes.
No salad.
No. He's covered in dressing. That's it.
Caesar's allowed. Isn't he?
You're not out punning yourself.
Sorry, no.
You can't stop.
I'll shut up. I haven't even seen this film. Yeah, carry on.
The apes are the stars. I mean, they even get top billing in the credits. You get all the apes first, and then the humans. Mm. And the humans are there to advance a bit of dialogue. And James Franco, primarily. John Lithgow is his dad. I want to say Frida Pinto. I'm not sure if it is Frida.
It is Frida. And Draco Malfoy as well.
Yes Draco. Briefly.
Mm. I mean, everyone in it is... They're just there to sort of, when you need a bit of dialogue. But quite a few chunks of it are just spent watching the apes and what they're doing, or what he's doing, mainly. And the most interesting bits are when he gets sort of separated and put in the company of other apes for the first time, and his interactions with them and what's going on. And there are a bit of subtitles there, because he's learned to sign and meets another ape who can sign. So they actually have a bit of a conversation we can follow. But beyond that, it's mostly just watching his eyes and his expressions and his stance and posture. So and that conveys a huge amount of information very well.
So the territorial body language, and probably quite accurate in many ways, I imagine. Something, you know, like in Gorillas in the Mist or something like that.
Yes.
But yeah, you don't need much else.
Mm. Mm. And, I mean, secrecy, which there no way you could have done... It, I mean, an ape mask wouldn't have been expressive, and an actual ape couldn't be controlled enough. So certain sequences, just him sort of staring someone down, and just all the other apes are moving around cages, and he's just standing in his cage, staring at Tom Felton, just looking him. And, but you couldn't recreate that any other way. I think if it was an ape mask, it just wouldn't have the same...
Oh, no, it wouldn't work at all.
No impression. And the eyes, it's all in the eyes, and the eyes are done very, very well.
And the eyes have got significance as well, in themselves.
Yes, very true.
So
there's no Helena Bonham Carter looking a bit like...
No,
she's got
no,
a muzzle.
No rubber mask going
on. No. No muzzle.
Yeah, I mean, the one, not even criticism as such, the one problem is that the trailer... is essentially the film compressed.
Well, that kind of put me off a bit in a way. I thought,
it's more emotionally involving watching the whole thing because there's a definite journey, and you can see sort of how Caesar is being treated and why he starts acting the way he does, and also just his own conflict essentially, which doesn't really come across in the trailer.
I don't think actually that's too much of a big problem because since you still don't know that that's the extent of it, and it's a bit of a relief because you're thinking, goodness, this could get really out of hand now, surely. Mm. And then you realise you don't actually need this epic kind of situation. The rise in Planet of the Apes, I mean, I think the emphasis is it's on the rise. It's not done yet. It's literally just the beginning. And even though, you know, the story sort of explains, as you say, in the trailer, I mean, that is it. The detail is in all of that. And it fills the film. I mean, that's it. You don't want any more.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't outstay its welcome. It's roughly about 1 hour 40 or so.
Yeah.
But it doesn't dawdle. There's no point. There's always something worth watching happening.
Yeah.
And it's not massively action heavy. The finale on the bridge which we see in the trailer, goes on for a little while. But that's interesting as well, because there's more sort of how they get to that point and, yeah, some of the apes organising themselves, which you don't really see in the trailer. So stuff like that.
And what they're trying to get out of it as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, their ultimate goal.
Yes.
Yes.
It's yeah. The thing is, at that point, it's not to harm human beings at all. Yeah. In fact, they're deliberately not trying to hurt anyone.
Yeah. Because I mean, the trailer just looks like, apes on the rampage and that's it. And there's not, there's more, they've got an objective in mind. And it's how they go about it and what they're trying to do. And whether people let them do it. Yeah, so I mean, there's...
Okay.
I'm not saying it's hugely involved, but there's more to it than just the trailer.
Well, it looked like, when I saw the trailer, although I thought, oh, it seems to have given away most of the film, it's kind of what you expect as well. As soon as you have the setup saying, oh, well, we start off with this ape being raised kind of stuff, and you think, then it goes a bit wrong. You know it's going to go wrong, and you know at the end of it, there's going to be, if you've seen any clip of any of the previous Planet of the Apes films, you know that's where they're heading.
And also just the title, Planet of the Apes.
Well, very true.
If the film ends with, they're all being destroyed, everything back to normal, then it's like, well, no, that's clearly not what's going to happen. But then there's another, without going into detail, without overselling it, there's another thing that happens in the film, which is significant and isn't referred to in the trailer at all, I think.
Okay.
So that's, which ends up being more important.
What you mean, like, I don't know.
It's the end credits explain it quite well.
Oh, yes, no, I thought that is part. Well,
I don't think it's mentioned in the trailer.
Not in the trailer.
Yeah,
no,
So you see that sort of unfolding. It's not a major thing. I mean,
I think that's really clever the way it's done, though, because it's
what in the credits.
Or... Yeah, as in the fact that it's not how you'd expect it from the title of the.
Yes. Yeah. Very true. Well, and it's also different to the original film. The original film, isn't it? There was like global nuclear war,
and something like that. I can't remember now.
So it's different from that.
Yeah. We've had quite a few emails mostly about the ending, actually, as well. Mm-hmm. Filmwatcher 47 says, a great watch, it's smart and also violent, it's done the original proud.
Yeah.
David Isaac says, Apes was brilliant, one of the best films I've seen for ages, but I do love apocalyptic in tone and also films which have creature in. Loved the mention of the missing mission to Mars, which echoed the very first Planet of the Apes film.
Mm.
Also, I thought the end was perfect. People should stay behind after the credits roll, as there is an extra scene which adds to the ending. Also, the graphics which form the backdrop to the credits complete the ending. Did you stay till after the credits? Do you know this scene?
We did, Steve. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't. I'm sure we did. Didn't we?
You said until we got kicked out. I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
Were you kicked out by a giant ape?
Yes.
And Keza McSimsey, hello Keza, says, ending of the apes potentially a bit, oh, wow, that's it then. Okay. However... Best use of ending credits graphic to reveal the narrative. Discuss.
Yeah,
that's the thing, because the credits, it's not footage during the film, but that's the thing, if there is a thing after the credits, then either we didn't stay, or missed it, or it's not over. But but if nothing else, during the credits, it's sort of expanded.
I see it now.
Yeah.
And Liam Woodman says, unsatisfactory ending, so that's our...
It's a relatively low-key ending, but I wouldn't say unsatisfactory, I think
depends
it fits.
Depends on what you want.
Setting up for a sequel?
Oh, definitely.
Just the beginning.
Yeah, and it could be... Yeah, I mean, it could well be a whole new franchise. Mm. But it could be because... I think if it ended with, apes are ruling all of humanity and humanity's in tatters, then you sort of have nowhere to go.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would also be a little bit too overblown. Because essentially, you get, as you see in the trailer, a couple of hundred apes running around San Francisco.
Mm.
So there's only so much damage they can do, really.
I think the director signed on for the second... film, whose his previous film before this was previous directing job was directing Hollyoaks on TV.
So he's done
what?
Bit of an upgrade.
It's quite, very similar in many ways.
Maneuvering fictional apes around the set.
Pretty much,
I did one thought as well, which is slightly silly, which you don't really think about in the context of the film, because it makes a bit more sense. But in the trailer, various people pointed out, you've got scientists who just say, no, you've somehow created a range of bulletproof apes. They're not bulletproof? Oh, I don't really see the problem. Right. And so you're going to think, you could just... You would have thought you could just slaughter them all quite easily. Mm. Problem solved.
That's nice.
No, I'm not saying you should.
Well,
But if they're all really worried about it. But in the film, there's like, you can sort of see what they try and do and what doesn't work. And also the apes outsmarting them, which isn't really obvious.
Well, maybe the sequel's lots of humans walking around in ape skin coats. I don't know. Maybe that's what's happening. I don't know. I'm not suggesting things. I'm just,
I think that the film itself was... Because you actually expect this film to be really, really blokey. Now, I am going to be a little bit,
unblokey? Critical?
Well, I don't mean to like sort of generalise in that way, but there's a lot of emotions going on. You know, this sort of nurturing aspect and a lot of subtleties and protection and various things get explained that I'd think that I wouldn't. I think girls would be put off by this film, and I must admit that I was actually quite impressed in the subtleties of the story, and the fact that it doesn't have this big, you know, sort of testosterone-y ending is rather wonderful. I like to say the word testosterone-y again.
It's my favourite kind of pest. Hey, give me a plate of testosterone-y! Come on!
Find me a too.
Yeah, you don't want to see how it's made.
And meatballs!
Testosterone-y and meatballs!
It sounded a little bit... It sounded a little bit northern with you just shouting out, and meatballs!
And meatballs!
Ah, I see. Sorry, I had to take a slight break due to technical issues. But yes, we're back.
The apes rampaged around the studio.
They did.
Ruining everything.
The apes fought the rioters. That's where it happened.
That's what it is. Well, in fact, because I saw the trailer in Cineworld Wood Green. Have you been to Cineworld Wood Green?
No, I haven't.
No, well, you've missed your chance. it's no longer there. I think it is still there, but Wood Green...
isn't
so much. Not all of it. But yeah, I saw the trailer and the poster saying, coming soon to Wood Green, Apes Will Rise. And then a week later... They did, and
carnage ensued.
The carnage ensued. All a bit crazy.
Oh, but, dear.
Yeah. So anyway,
yeah.
Same week actually. There's also a documentary out this week called Project NIMH.
Yes, I want to
about
see that.
The ape thing. Yeah.
Various people mentioned it, and I know that. Is it about signing ape or a?
Yeah, it's about an ape that was brought up and in a sort of human context,
and
in the similar way to Caesar was taught to sign and so on.
Yeah, he didn't have a heightened intelligence, but the fact is that this ape was brought up in a family, had these family connections as a university project, I think it was, and then the ape itself came into adolescence and you know, didn't work within a family home, as you might imagine.
It was experimentally brought up in the 70s in a hippie-ish household in New York.
And then, obviously, things went a little bit pear-shaped, the project ran out of funding, and then this ape was taken off to, effectively... almost like what we see in the film, some sort of a sanctuary or, place where he's effectively imprisoned.
Nice.
And then the bit at the end when he was reunited with one of the people who first was with him, and apparently he signed play.
Aww.
And they played and they both cried.
I bet. I'm crying thinking
this
about it.
This is 20 years later. But then this ape died at the age of about 30, which is ridiculously young for an ape.
Oh, is he? So this is your tone of voice. Then the ape died. I was like, oh, so it's all right.
No, as in it must have had... they imply that maybe it had, basically died of a broken heart.
Not good.
I mean, a lot in this film, you definitely side with the apes. There's a couple of references to the original film, which I think are uncomfortable.
Yes, yeah, there is a damn dirty ape line, which it just sounds horribly forced.
Really?
Yeah.
It wouldn't... no one, in the context in which it happens, no one would say that. They'd more likely just go, ah! Yeah.
Or say something a bit stronger.
Well, I think also, I think also when you're remaking a film, if it's that long ago, because that was the 60s, wasn't it?
Well, that's the thing. And also, while they're well known, they're not.
But it means an audience going to see Rise of the Planet of the Apes, a typical audience is in their 20s, maybe.
Yeah.
20s, 30s. And they're not going to remember that line particularly. Yeah. If you're remaking something from the 80s or doing Terminator 4, you can do an I'll Be Back reference.
Yeah.
Line, but
I think it's that, I've forgotten the word. What's it?
I don't know. Leprechaun? Meatballs? Testosterone?
Yeah, let's go with that. It's that really meatball-y thing. I think if they added another word to make it more modern day, it would be like, oh yeah, that's funny, but it's still referenced. But the fact that they just kept it as it is, it's like suddenly being possessed by somebody else.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Yeah.
It could have been more tongue-in-cheek rather than...
Yeah.
But also, I just think that anyone with that much of a fond attachment to the original films would probably just be annoyed that they've made this anyway.
Yeah.
And anyone who goes to see this with a blank slate won't care about the rest.
But then there are a lot of fans of the whole franchise of Planet of the Apes, of all five films as they were, who I think probably will get behind this and think, brilliant,
exactly.
They're making more of them. I love, it's a whole world they love to see.
Well, true, you say that, but then it's a reboot thing. If the remake of the Italian Job.
But this fits with the previous films, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly.
This doesn't contradict the previous
films. No, it does contradict the previous films.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. Ooh. The origins. Because I think the origins of the previous franchise are dealt with in the fourth film, and I go back in time to the 70s and see. And it's something like the Planet of the Apes, the original.
They're doing
one.
It in the fourth film, kind of suggests.
Well, they were running out of it. But I think in that, it was something like there was some illness that killed off all the dogs and cats, and so apes started being kept as pets. And then they sort of
weren't.
I'd like to go back and watch
the apes film originally. Mm.
So it could have been like giant hamsters taking over the planet.
Planet of the Giant Hamsters. They tried to pitch it, it wouldn't sell.
Yes.
The Fall of the Guinea Pig.
Maybe we should have done that rather than each sequel change it to Conquest of the Fall of the whatever. Yeah. Just go, okay, we're not going to change that, but we'll change the animal. So we've had Planet of the Apes, now we're going to have Planet of the Hamsters.
Rise of the Planet of the Termites.
Exactly. Yeah, good work.
And then change another one. Yeah, Rise of the Neighbourhood of the Termites. Yeah. Start changing the pronouns. Yeah.
Rise of the Planet of the Gemeratitans. We all have our own pet Gemeratitans.
Oh.
And I'm the leader.
hi Zoe, hey, how are you?
One tangent I was going to chuck in, which actually links together both Planet of the Apes, well, Charlton Heston, and Testosterone, is that last night, this episode will go out in the next few days, won't it?
I think it should go out, it's due today.
Oh, well, you're right.
3 days ago. So
in which case, if you're listening and near Cheltenham, come to Greenbelt Festival this weekend where I'm performing. and I'm doing, on Friday, I'm doing a show about the book of Exodus, following up from Genesis years ago. So I'm trying to cram, basically, like my Old Testament exam at university when I was meant to read all the books and didn't. I just watched The Prince of Egypt. Similar for this one, I meant to read the book of Exodus and then do jokes about it, but instead I'm watching The Ten Commandments.
Right.
And I've got a DVD of the life story of Moses, which is not the Charlton Heston one, but it's like an 80s, Ben Kingsley as Moses. Okay. And it's all right. And I've been saying to my wife for days, like, I need to watch this, so can we just watch it at some point? And of course, we always put it off, because we think it's work, it's going to be a bit heavy.
Yeah.
And we thought, we'll do it. Last night, we thought, we'll sit down and we'll just watch it. And we got about 15 minutes in to this 3-hour epic. And we just thought, it's a bit heavy. Should we just watch someone else? Like, yeah, let's watch something else. So we took it out, and instead we watched Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Nice.
So,
wow.
Which was much better.
Which is quite,
And I was all the way through trying to find some sort of link to the book of Exodus and manna from heaven, of course.
Yes.
God gives manna from heaven.
Yeah, not necessarily. I think doing a comedy show based on Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
That might work.
A little bit obscure.
It might work. But that was the link with it.
Different
testosterone. Meatballs.
Meatballs.
Yeah. Although with the...
Wow.
It's not the best
Exodus
story,
the
it was a good film. All I'm saying is Cloudy is a good film.
Yeah, it's a really, like really good film.
Is Exodus the seven plagues?
Seven plagues, there's all that stuff.
Well, so, that's ten locusts, not termites. But it was all insects. We're multi-threading.
Anyway,
good. James getting confused.
Shall we move on to somebody else?
Yes, what's next?
Should we do some emails? Because we got some 100th birthday emails.
Yay!
Such as, my computer's just powered down as we're doing it. Super Toy has emailed in. Congrats on 100 podcasts.
Thank you.
Insert something witty here in your best Midwestern accent. Oh dear. Because we said we'd read things out in an accent of people's choosing.
Oh really? Oh, okay. I definitely wouldn't.
What's a Midwestern accent?
Midwestern as in West Country?
Well, he said,
I think probably American.
Kind of like the folks in Fargo, but not as hokey.
Okay, congrats on 100 podcasts.
I think that's exactly as hokey.
I think you just dislocated your jaw.
I did rather. I want to do a hoedown now.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
That signifies the end of the email. Next.
I've also got another email. See, we're doing this on a smaller screen than normal, and I can't read it.
Should I make it the text bigger?
I can do it. No, at an angle, I can do it.
From who?
From Blair Tyler, saying hello to my favourite banterers.
Hello.
Hopefully I'll get this in time for your 100th episode. If not, Paul's doing a teleprompter. He's outpacing me. If not, consider yourself equivalent to family birthdays in regard to late well wishes. No, you're in time, so it's all
good.
Huge congratulations on 100 eps, and congratulations to me for being smart enough to follow the podcast from the beginning when I first saw it pop up on Movie Mistakes.
Yeah.
It's an original.
Back in the old days.
What started with tirades against Max Payne moved through countless insults
Max
at Jen.
Don't get me started.
Wow.
It wasn't Gary, no. Moved through countless insults at Jen, horrendous attempts to segue into film reviews, and numerous conversations that including, it's got this guy who, what's his name? Oh, you talk, I'll look it up. Yeah, they'll almost certainly be one of them
that
as well.
That does sound like us, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's boiled it down to the essence of the podcast quite nicely. Oh. It's been a great 100 episodes, and the first 100 were if the first 100 were the Italian Job of 1969, let's hope the next 100 aren't the Italian Job of 2003. What do you mean, even better? And phenomenally awesome.
Yeah, I like your style.
Because the first 100 are a bit overrated and rubbish. And now Paul's going to punch me in the face. Salt Captain America, while it was good fun, I thought it fell short of what should have been, considering it's the latest installment before the last installment before the Avengers. A little anticlimactic. Some good humour, particularly from Tommy Lee Jones, but I thought some of the fight scenes were a little lacking. It's difficult to get overly excited about battles that essentially go throw shield, fetch shield, repeat.
We shall talk about Captain America.
Well, yes, we can do it. Also saw Deathly Hallows Part 2 at a midnight release, no less. I think all that needs to be said about the film is a superb way to end the series, and Alan Rickman is great. In closing, I must ask the one question that has held the show together all this time. Has John watched Schindler's List yet?
Have you?
And the answer is...
No.
Really?
No. Oh. I was talking to this about people that we were talking to two people about this at the weekend. Talking about, you know, films we haven't seen. And various people say, oh, I haven't seen this, I haven't seen this. And I said Schindler's List, and everyone gave me a shocked look.
Exactly.
I know.
But I got it for you for your birthday 3 years ago.
Well, yes.
Oh, clearly, I'll take it back.
Yeah.
But no more birthday presents until you watch it.
I think we should do like what Paul has done. I think we should try and watch Schindler's List.
Hospitalise me and make me watch
That's the only way I couldn't move out of bed. I was stuck there.
But as I said at the weekend...
It's like Clockwork Orange with my eyes pinned open with matchsticks.
As I said at the weekend, the trouble is you're very rarely in the mood... Well, I am very rarely in the mood to watch Schindler's List. If you think, oh, I quite fancy watching a film, what am I going to watch? I'm never going to get back from a hard day... If ever, and just sort of think, what could we do with watching Schindler's List?
Well, let's watch Schindler's List and then up.
No, because that starts really depressingly.
Yeah, but then it goes up.
It's right there in the title.
It's down then up. That's what it should be called.
No, yeah. I will do it at some point, one day. But I kind of like it as my hook.
Well, I haven't seen it since it was released, I think, so I'd like to watch it again. But I'd say let's all have a viewing together.
Mm, yes.
But my worry is that knowing how much we generally banter, if we see any film together, we'll just. Banter throughout.
And make horrifically bad-taste jokes.
It's not exactly a director's commentary kind of film. But at some point, we will have a special when we dissect The Italian Job and Schindler's List and report home on this.
And yeah, and actually, to think about Blair's email, we're also going to do a Harry Potter collective.
The whole
Because we have all seen Harry Potter, and I think, tips.
Yes, generally. The general verdict is good. Yeah.
Very, very short review.
Actually, very good.
But yes, we're going to do we're covering all
the
films.
More to, there's more to be said.
Yes,
so,
yes, so we will do that a future time. Yeah. Harry Potter.
But you did also talk about Captain America, which we have all seen.
We have all seen.
Yeah.
We have all seen. So should we do that now? Should we do Captain America-ness?
Sure. Have you got any more emails?
The only one was an audio email.
Oh, yes.
From Jed.
Yes,
I will
do some technical wizardry and splice in.
So that audio email may appear now.
Hello, Movie Banter. This is Jed Young, long-time listener and friend of the show. Well, you've called me that yourselves, although I hope I can call myself a friend of the show. I just want to say congratulations on reaching your 100th episode. This has been fantastic listening to you, and it has helped me a lot to grow as a film reviewer, as a screenwriter, and as a person indeed. And still nursing that crush on Jenny Masters. Happy birthday, centenary, whatever you would like to call it. Treat yourself to many pirated films. Suitable for those age 3.24 and above. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jed.
Thanks, Jed.
Thank you.
Yay.
Yes.
If you haven't heard it, then we failed. Yeah.
No, if we haven't heard it, if I haven't done it, I'll cut out this line.
Okay.
So no one will
so
even
know. Heard this.
Yeah. Or I might leave it in just to confuse people and then think there is a gun. Okay.
So
no, it should be spliceable. It should be right. But yes, so thank you for that.
Speaking of splicing, our Desert Island Flicks this week is... Best biopunk film, which is about genetic splicing.
Yeah.
Best after 100 episodes, we're on to genetic splicing films. That's what we're on.
Because Planet of the Apes fits, and Captain America fits as well.
Ish, yes.
And the Devil's Double
clone
Dominic Cooper.
Clone Dominic Cooper.
Yeah. So we will come to that later.
Indeed.
On.
Well, I didn't know about that one yet, so looking forward to that.
Your best. Everyone's got a very biopunk film.
Exactly.
Hey,
biopunk. Great album band title. Anyway, moving on.
Captain America.
Yes.
See, this is the last film before the Avengers hits next summer. Not the last film completely, but the last Avengers film.
Yes.
And it's they've done well, I think. There haven't been that many weak entries in the Marvel stable. And I was slightly worried that this was going to be it, because I think there was a Captain America film like early 90s.
Something like that, yeah.
Which looked quite awful. I think I have seen bits of it when it was on TV, and it wasn't good. It would have been a very boy-y film, and it was Captain America fighting Red Skull. But it was Captain America fighting Red Skull with just a terrible red mask on, and Captain America wearing pajamas, and it was just it wasn't good.
It was the days before I don't know what heralded the big action hero superhero.
Batman stuff. Yeah. Well, actually, yes, but I think Batman probably showed. Except this was after Batman.
Oh, was it?
But,
was it?
Yeah. But it may have been because that was because Captain America is Marvel and Batman was DC, so it could be that Batman led it, and then Marvel thought. And also, I think Marvel generally. I mean, my knowledge is appalling, but I think Marvel was floundering a bit in the '90s and then had a bit of a resurgence. And Blade is generally viewed as sort of the start of the modern era.
And of course, the modern the Nolan Batman films really sort of make people think, oh, we can kind of do it in a cool way, and it doesn't have to be wearing your pants outside your trousers kind of superhero-ness.
But of course, I mean, Superman did it very well, but then it died off. So I think Captain America was just a low, the first one, just a low-budget attempt and didn't really work. But this, they throw money at it, and the end result is very good. And Chris Evans is well chosen.
Yes.
Because he looks the part, but he's not playing, he's not nearly as cocky and wisecracky as he is in most of his other roles.
Well, they deliberately, that whole first third of the film, which is Little Chris.
Yes.
Which is quite sweet.
And they deliberately. He's standing there, tackle out.
But they deliberately. It's an 18 Red Bull. They deliberately play up this whole idea that he's a sympathetic, nice guy. Kind of thing. So he's not wisecracking.
Yeah, because he's very short, very weedy.
Yeah. Empathetic.
But big in heart.
And pathetic.
Well, picked on. And
And then, so him dealing with, suddenly becoming huge, but he's still the same person. Which they do. It's not overly hammered home, while still making it very clear. And put him in situations where, he can be brave with the physique to carry it through.
Yes.
But not having an arrogant personality that comes along with it.
And
good supporting cast. Tommy Lee Jones was in it more than I expected him to be, actually.
I thought he was very good in it.
He was very good. Very well chosen. All the things you expect him to be.
Yeah, and he does... I think he said on the Men in Black film, where people said, oh, you're very funny. And he said, well, no, I'm just good at not being funny, but letting the people around me be funny.
Yeah.
Or sort of, I just say things, but then they fit.
Well, he's perfectly chosen as this sort of drill sergeant kind of... He's funny in the film because he barks these sort of angry instructions at people. I thought the rest were very good. Hugo Weaving and Toby Jones.
And also, I'm a sucker. I don't know what style. I mean, Jen, you'll probably know actually what word there is to describe the style of this film. But it's that sort of sci-fi 40s era.
It's kind of like a retro
40s.
Huge flying, some giant flying wings and planes that take off vertically.
It's a World War II film, really.
It is mostly with a bit of. Sci-fi.
They played down the sci-fi quite well, I thought.
Yes.
I mean, I did actually think that Hugo Weaving, good as he is in the film, was much better when he was Hugo Weaving than when he was suddenly this Red Skull face thing. Just because, they had to do it to make it the character that we sort of know from.
I thought that was a bit of a stretch, actually.
But he was, acting. He's a great actor. Yes. I like to see his face acting rather than. This kind of CGI thing.
But I think, I got the impression it looked like makeup to me.
Well, it probably was a makeup, but I'd just rather see him. I'd rather see him.
Fair enough. But again, at least it's far better than it was. Again, like Planet of the Apes, it's not just, a rough red mask thrown on him. It looks like it's his actual face.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how that developed, though, because a couple of things in the plot-wise of how he got to that, I would like to have stood, because it's such a difference. That you're thinking, how did that happen?
Yeah, it was quite suddenly done, that suddenly he goes, and here's how I also look.
Yeah.
And like, Scooby-Doo ending kind of moment.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
That didn't bother me. Because he basically said, it went wrong, but this is the result.
It went wrong, and therefore I've got no skin. What? I mean, it's...
I had no problem with the idea of massive genetic modification. If you're experimenting with that, and the end results could be anything. So my problem was
he had a face for the first bunch of the film.
No, he's just wearing a mask.
Well, yeah, but why not put the mask back on again, then?
That's true,
Why not go, look, this is how I really look, and then put the mask back on and go, but I'm still Hugo Weaving. That's much better.
Yeah, he does seem to lose all interest in keeping the mask on.
Was it, I presume, that his name in it, which was...
Johann
Schmidt, wasn't it? Yes. I presume that's from the original Captain America thing.
Probably.
Because Johann Schmidt is the German for John Smith.
John Smith, yeah.
And I thought, isn't he Mr. Smith in the Matrix films?
Yes.
Maybe that's tied in. He's the German version of Smith. Yes.
But no, I'd imagine that's probably the character's name in the comics. But I'm not sure. And actually, it does tie in. I mean, the whole plot of the film ties into the post-credit sequence of Thor.
Yeah.
Which fits quite well as well. So the artifact they're toying over, it comes up with that. So they're... And without being too heady-handed, I mean, there's no... Iron Man 2, I think, is the only one that beat you over the head. You know, Avengers is coming and we're setting it up.
Which is the one that annoyed me the most, I think, particularly characters.
Well, just because they pop up and actually... I saw that again the other day. Still enjoyed it.
I still...
But the fact that they actually seem to invade the film.
They do.
It is clunky. Whereas all the others have been far good at sort of sowing a few seeds, but then moving on. Yeah. And like this one, I mean, you get the throwback to Thor, and I think at the very end... You sort of see the sky, and then you can. It's a little bit of, you know, Thor bridges, possible stuff going on. But it's very much its own film. And then the post credits bit again sort of sets up the Avengers.
I mean, to be honest, it's a bit of a challenge, isn't it? It's a bit of a feat getting all these. In a film, getting all these different styles, all these different kinds of superheroes working together.
Oh, it's hugely ambitious. Yeah. And thus far, it looks like they've. If nothing else, pulled it off better than people worried they might. It still may not be brilliant, but I'm inclined to hope it will be quite good, considering the general quality.
I just thought it would be. I'm just, if you look at the back catalogue of the Avengers films so far, I was just thinking the other day that the talent, or the on-screen talent they've got for it, ranges,
and
you know,
the off-screen talent.
And the off-screen talent as well, but, you know, the more notable stuff for us watching it. Everyone, on the side of good, you've got, you know, Robert Downey Jr.'s Ed Norton, who won't be coming back, I don't think it's Mark Ruffalo.
Yes,
I think,
for the new one. He's good.
He's good as, you know, Jeff Bridges, you know, has been in it. And and then in this one alone, you've got, you know, Chris Evans doing it, Tommy Lee Jones, and they're just really good, really good actors.
Oh, Hayley Atwell as the chaste love interest.
Very good.
She was very good. Yeah, they've made it far more. I think there was discussion, and some people online.
What's that, Jen?
Jen was miming someone sort of carrying two watermelons, I think. I'm not quite sure why.
No, it was just a heavy load. It's just, what?
Well, it was they even went to sort of the British wartime, like, well, the bras they have are kind of, bing, you know, it was a little bit sort of...
She has a 40s physique.
Actually, I did really love the styling of this, the fact that it was, you know, that all the sort of the posters were all like the wartime propaganda, and it was really, really well done, even though obviously a little bit sci-fi, a little bit postmodern, but it was generally very believable.
But it's only sort of one side. I mean, the whole idea is that they harnessed, you know, artifact power to make evil weaponry. But even then, the end result is still basically guns that glow a bit.
And that's only on
the bad guys' side, and the good guys are all using this all conventional.
Yeah,
Captain America is the best weapon they have.
I thought it was a very good. I thought that was the saviour for that film, was the 40s nature of it.
Yes,
because
I
sat down to watch it thinking, okay, what else can they do with the superhero franchise? You know, I've seen Thor, and like, I've enjoyed Thor, but I really thought, is it going to be just gung ho America, USA, USA? Yeah. And actually, because they went to the 40s stuff. It felt classy.
Yeah.
I thought I enjoyed
because it feels like a worldwide.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you feel you could allow them that because, well, that was the past and that was then. Mm. And I think it was also really, really the most clever way I've seen. I think maybe Watchmen might be the only other exception, is having quite a strong reference to the way that Captain America originally looked, but embracing that as part of the story.
Because originally, I mean, we see in the film, he gets. Because there's only one of him, and there's meant to be loads for events that we see. And he gets put onto USO shows and is just parading around in the original Captain America costume, which looks a little bit daft.
Very theatrical.
Yeah, and he says it looks a little bit daft, and some people laugh.
Which looks like the underpants outside, like we talked about earlier, pre-modern, cool superhero.
And then when he decides to go out into the field, it just gets modified. You know, it's still recognisable, but it does look, it's just something that becomes far more practical. And the set photos of the Avengers... Now look, it's somewhere, it's sort of slightly in between the two, but in a good way. I think it looks less functional World War II like. It's slightly more spandexy, but not a lot more. It still looks like it sort of fits in with all the other Marvel characters.
Well, because it's as he explains, the character explains himself. It's about having a figurehead, as you know, having a symbol more than anything. So, you know, how else do you get? I mean, what kind of arrogance is there for a guy to call himself? I am Captain America.
Yes.
And it's like, well, no. It's the corporation. It's wartime. We need a hero. We need you to play this role. And begrudgingly,
and so
in many ways, he does.
And then everyone knows him as that, even when he starts doing all properly. So they just stick with the name because it's. I think various
good PR.
Some right wing American blogs are essentially saying, "Oh, how dare they make change it from Captain America to it's all suddenly Captain Worldwide huggy feelingness." Which I think is a massive overreaction.
It's sold it to us. I don't think we would have bought it.
And I think worldwide, I think the studio shipped it out, essentially saying, you know, it, depending on each market, you can call it Captain America, The First Avenger, or Captain America, or I think you can just call it The First Avenger. And I think almost every country is stuck with Captain America. Because I thought, even, you know, it's not really some American jingoistic thing, it's what the character's called. Mm. And it's symbolic of that era. And it's fine. And you've got various other multinational people brought in, who are in the comics as well. I mean, it's the Howling Commandos, who don't get much to do, but essentially the people he hangs out with most and fights with.
It's even quite funny having the Yanks over in the UK during during the war, and that kind of mentality on the British front, the Blitz sort of attitude to these rather flamboyant, well-paid people coming over to an impoverished town. It's great, I think. Yeah, well done.
It felt like a bit of a throwback, but in a good way. And it's not dark and gritty trying to ultra realism, but it's still very grounded and believable.
Well, it felt very much like the Indiana Jones films. A lot of crossover with that whole Nazi fascination with supernatural.
Did you like this better than you did the fourth Indiana Jones film?
There is actually a direct Indiana Jones reference. Which is at the very beginning when we see Johann Schmidt looking for this artifact thing, and people are essentially saying, "Yeah, why are you looking for it around here?" Because Hitler is off in the desert digging for stuff, and he makes some reference to, Hitler's looking for trinkets in the desert or something like that, which is a line from Raiders of the Lost Ark, where I think the bad guy in that is essentially mocking Hitler for looking in the wrong place while he's finding things.
What I thought they did very cleverly as well was it was almost getting slightly uncomfortable at a couple of points. I felt it could have been uncomfortable in terms of it's very showy, glamorous kind of a film, which then rewriting history a little bit in terms of they could have gone towards the whole thing of, well, the Nazis were harnessing this power to try and win the war.
Yes.
So what they did very cleverly is sidestep that by saying,
yes,
no, it's a new project. I've now turned my back on, this. The Red Skull turns back on Hitler as well as the world.
Even Hitler, I view as it's a bit of a lightweight. I'm going my own way.
Which is kind of good, because if you suddenly start messing too much, unless you do it entirely balls out Quentin Tarantino style, we are rewriting history here, I think it's quite good to avoid all of that a little bit. But they did well.
One. Tenuous connection, well, not that too, but to the Quentin Tarantino thing, there's a recent argument, I think, or he may have stated it in an interview or similar, saying that his idea of his films and Inglourious Basterds has always been, or has been that, his films sort of take place in a reality where Inglourious Basterds happened. So that is what happened in his history, and so his films since have been where World War II ended by Hitler being machine gunned bloodily in a cinema. So that's why pop culture is sort of more referenced in his films, and it's a little bit more violent and extreme, because that's the way American culture went after the events of Inglourious Basterds.
Well, we talked about that when Inglourious Basterds came out, that actually for Vic Vega and all that sort of stuff, that's how Hitler died, in their world, which is odd, but quite, it kind of fits.
It sort of makes sense. Yes, this does have a sort of, Captain America has just a parallel thing. And they could have just gone the Nazi route, it would have made it slightly more interesting.
We've got some comments. Should we have some comments?
Yes.
Nick Tyler says, Captain America, surprisingly great. Very good. And Christina Ellers says, saw Captain America in a cinema full of guys, everyone wishing that the machine that transforms a skinny little lad into a tall, handsome hunk could really be invented one day.
Very true. I think it's called stilts and exercise.
Stilts and exercise.
It's a weird combination.
It's a good plan.
Exactly.
Yeah, the S&E plan.
Steroids.
Apparently, actually, the little Steve stuff was actually him, but because they tried to do it with a body double in his head, but instead they ended up with him walking around and then sort of digitally reduced him. Because it was easier to do it that way, and he ended up moving the right way for just being
there
skinny.
There were a couple of moments at the very start of the film that his head doesn't fit that body.
Yeah, it's quite a
big head.
It was quite a big head, wasn't it? Yeah.
But I suppose
they mostly didn't do it too bad.
Those problems are always going to be there.
I think you buy into it. I think if it was irritating, then the film was bad, then you would be saying, "Oh, and that was awful as well." As it is, the film's good, so you don't really care. It's just sort of it fits.
Tying into the next one we can talk about, if we're nearly done with Captain America, is that Dominic Cooper was in Captain America.
See, is he playing? Is he Bucky or is he?
He's Tony Stark's dad, isn't he?
Yes, Howard Stark. Who plays Bucky? I can't remember his name.
Who's Bucky?
I don't think it wasn't a name that I knew. Yeah, it was. Unfamiliar actor. He was very good.
Yeah.
Bucky was good.
But Howard Stark.
Howard Stark is played by Dominic Cooper with again an accent that I felt slightly veered.
occasionally, and I thought it was maybe a slight shame that I like Dominic Cooper, but I don't. I think him as a Brit in plucky London sort of thing in the war.
Yes, that would have been lovely.
Worked quite well.
True. Mm. But then you need his Howard Stark. Well, I just need him, but he was a logical addition.
I think the accent just jarred me a little bit occasionally.
It didn't register
quite,
to me.
Quite hit the mark.
I didn't think. I mean, having seen Iron Man 2 again, the Howard Stark in that. Quite different.
Mm. Yes, but then
and it's not that far old. It wasn't made that long ago.
No, but it's just a different actor. Mm. It went a different
it's
way.
Going to be, yeah, and equally in The Devil's Double, where Dominic Cooper plays Uday Hussein, Saddam's son. Again,
and
the accent, and indeed his double.
Mm.
Again, I felt the accent occasionally jarred a little bit, but he's a good. I like him. I want to like him more.
Was it? I mean, because I haven't actually seen this, but I got close.
Yeah, I want to know more about it.
Because the thing that seems to play me about your reviews saying that the film isn't brilliant, but Dominic Cooper is very good in it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary. I think, and the film actually is pretty compelling.
Mm.
I feel like. I half want to blame the director, who's Lee Tamahori, who did...
Yes.
He's got a very checkered history of filmmaking. Mm. He did Die Another Day, mm-hmm. which slightly killed off that Bond franchise for a bit.
Did he do Mask of Zorro?
He might have done Mask of Zorro. He's done...
We're getting into a... Who's that bloke? Oh,
yeah, I know. It's a long time.
Wilderness.
But he's done a couple of, he did Once Upon a Warriors and he's done some great sort of individual independent film type films as well. But then he's done... some American, kind of big, just summer blockbuster kind of things, which didn't seem to have much feeling or directorial mark on it. So you're kind of watching it thinking, is it going to be a formulaic thriller as he's done previously, or is it going to be something a bit quirky? And it is quite quirky,
mm-hmm.
but I found throughout, I mean, what the idea is that it's Uday Hussein, it's a true story, Uday Hussein, Saddam's psychopathic son, who hired a double, who was a guy he was at school with, who looked a little bit like him. And he forced him to have plastic surgery, particularly fix his teeth to make his teeth look worse, so he looked like Uday Hussein and could be his double. Mm. And so it is a true story. It's based on the book by the double. And it's a very compelling watch, I think, because of the true nature to it, the true history to it, and the fact that it's in our lifetimes and very recently.
Mm.
It's mostly set around late 80s, early 90s. But yeah, I felt throughout, I was watching it thinking, this is a mafia type film. We're watching really here gangsters, is what we're watching on a very big international scale. And it made me think, I'd love to see Martin Scorsese have done this.
Yeah.
Maybe with Dominic Cooper, maybe again with someone like a Daniel Day-Lewis or a Leonardo DiCaprio kind of actor, which is partly why I thought, although I really like Dominic Cooper and I think he did a great job in portraying these two characters who are often in the same scene together. In every scene there's one of them.
Yeah.
In most scenes there's probably both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a very short shoot, so literally he would have no time. He'd just turn up, do one part, 10 minutes later be doing the next part.
Sort moustaches.
Acting off himself as well, so he'd have to just perform it one way, then perform it another way. And nowhere in the whole film are you ever looking at him thinking, which one is he? You can tell from a facial expression or a look, even though they look identical.
Yeah.
Well, they're the same person.
But they've been made to look identical, so it's not like I'm playing his brother, but I can have a... pair of glasses or
they're meant to be playing two people who look identical.
They're meant to be playing people who look completely identical, and yet you can always tell which one he is. He's very good at doing that. But yeah, I just maybe felt that the story might have benefited from a director who had a bit more flair with it.
It's quite nasty.
It's a very nasty film as well, actually, because Uday, I looked up afterwards.
It does sound quite graphic and horrific.
Yeah, I mean, there's everything from full frontal nudity at Uday Hussein's sex parties to... garrotting, disemboweling. Mm. There's a banquet scene which contains it's a little bit much, put it that way.
It sounds like it's sort of the Al Capone and the Untouchables with a baseball bat, but worse.
Yeah, it's nasty stuff. But what I found unusual is that there's elements in the film, particularly in terms of the sort of the subplot, the love kind of angle, which is the double getting interested in Uday's girlfriend. And being obviously the double's much more sympathetic character by a long stretch than Uday. And you can tell there's some bits that don't quite hang together there. And I found out afterwards that there's a lot they've made up for the film to make it. They've kind of based it on the book by the double and not on, known history as such.
Right.
So it's a slightly skewed angle. And because there's those elements, you're there thinking, well, I don't know what's true and what isn't.
which slightly rankles, particularly when I read afterwards that Uday Hussein's actual story, there are things he did in reality which could have fitted, could have made a great film out of.
Oh, dear. I mean,
things like, you know, there's bits in the film where he just takes women off the street and just takes them home, and if he wants someone, he just grabs them and that's it. And that's all in there. But, for example, there's stuff about, in reality about the Iraqi football team he was given charge of. Mm. And he actually had a chart as to which players should be punished in what ways, according to how badly they performed.
Right.
And he punished them by making them kick concrete footballs in prison and stuff like that. Or he'd get people with open wounds and throw them in sewage so that the wounds got infected. So not he was properly nasty.
Yeah.
He wasn't just like, I'm going to punish you a bit. This is...
Yeah, he was
total,
he was
a psychopath,
yeah.
Completely. And there's elements of that, some, I think, quite worryingly fascinating parts of his life story that could have been in the film, because it's going for that gross set. It was quite gory at times, and I felt there's a slightly more compelling story to be told if they did it differently. But Dominic Cooper is very good in it, and it's well worth a watch, and it's quite eye-opening as to that part of recent history. That
do you know, I'd actually... I was teetering before.
It's recommended.
I think... On that, I think I'd actually quite like to go and see
it. Yeah, well, I think it may still be on.
There was a worry that Dominic Cooper fans who've seen him in Mamma Mia and slightly more family-friendly type things may go and see it thinking, hang on a second, he's a little bit kind of nastier in this than I remember.
But then it's probably quite a good...
When's he going to sing some ABBA?
He's probably doing that deliberately to get away from
his fair play
to image.
Yeah. I have various people mention it's a career-making role for him.
Yeah, I think he's very good in it.
What was the film he did with Jennifer Aniston? Oh, goodness me.
The one with her in the tiny denim shorts.
Yes.
Oh, the one in the village.
Yes.
IMDb.
Oh, is that film with the thing? No, I don't want to now.
I haven't seen it, so I haven't.
It's not The Disappearance of Alice Creed. It's the other one.
Yeah, the one that's the reappearance of Alice Creed.
Yes. That's it.
Yeah. Where he's playing,
it's just a girl's name. It's like Anna Alice... No, not Alice Green. It's just her. It's just no. You see, Blair, you've ruined this for us now. We would have just done it without a second thought.
We'll be noted by now.
Yeah.
But the fact is that he's obviously playing this sort of heartthrob pin-up, and I'm just imagining that this is worlds away. That was my only point.
Yes. No, I know, but now you just set
us off. He's in a boy band, and now he's... You know, he's playing some sort of narcissistic guy in a boy band, and now he's playing some narcissistic guy in the country.
Going back to Captain America, briefly talking about direction, the director of Captain America is Joe Johnston.
Yes,
it's weird because he did
The Lost World.
And The Wolfman, which were both.
Ooh.
Oh, hang on, no, Lost World. No,
Jurassic Part 2.
No, that's Steven Spielberg. Oh, we didn't know you did Jurassic Park 3.
Ah, 3.
Yes. But see, he has a less than stellar track record. Mm. I think he's done other good films in the past. But it seems to be, reading up on it, that it's mainly he gets brought in for where another director has left, or it's a bit of a rush job. And he generally seems to be the go-to guy. You know, bring in Joe Johnston, he'll make it watchable.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on The Wolfman, you might have said, oh, really, Captain America's well... Blah, blah. But then Captain America's shown, if you bring him in from the start and say, here's a good budget, and
he can do very good things. The Rocketeer before that as well, which is very similar to Captain America.
Yeah, and he's meant to be very, very good.
Good film.
Tamara Drew.
Is that what you've been looking up all that time?
No, I haven't been looking anything up.
There you go, Blair, you see, we are that.
Yeah, I just used my brain.
There's one thing I wanted to mention in Devil's Double, which is quite nice, which was that there's one just lovely little moment where the double is walking past the tennis court and is clearly hating being there, but his family being threatened, he has to be there. He has to sort of go along with all this stuff. But knowing he can get away with stuff because Uday doesn't want to kill him like he'd kill anyone else.
Yes,
because he doesn't need him.
Yeah.
And there's one nice little scene of him walking past the tennis court where what looks like Saddam Hussein is playing with Saddam Hussein.
Right.
And my first thought was, oh, it's Saddam and his double.
Yeah.
They're playing. But I ended the scene thinking, what's quite nice is we don't know if that's what we saw, or if we saw one of Saddam's doubles playing with another of Saddam's doubles. It could be that.
Yeah, very true.
Either way, it's doubles tennis.
Or could just be a lot of...
Thank you.
Ultimately, it could just be, because I think that look was quite popular at the time anyway.
Well, they are identical.
No, it's not just two mustachios.
How many did he have?
He had about five, I think.
I can't. Do you think there was like one which was like, everyone's a bit ill, so we'll just get Barry.
Well, he's a bit like, never mind the Buzzcocks, the lineup. What it is, he's just like about 3 foot.
What a wizened old man with a moustache. I will do.
He's only good from like nipples up.
Clearly,
you know?
Yeah.
That's it.
But he matches my singing voice perfectly. Well, I've got a karaoke, I'll take him.
We'll use him for Live Aid.
The actor playing Saddam in the film is. Sorry, go for it.
No, what's that film, Michael Keaton? Multiplicity.
Multiplicity, yeah.
So many different aspects of his personality.
Especially like that. Devil's Double is like Multiplicity. In no way at all. The character playing Saddam and his doubles in this is Philip Quast. And I thought, I know that name. How do I know him? And he's the guy, he hasn't done many films, but he's Inspector Javert in most of the Les Miserables productions from the stage. Mm. So he's basically made a history of playing nasty fellows.
Yeah.
And happens to look a bit like Saddam when he wears moustache.
He's quite handy.
He could have been coming useful back in 1990 in Baghdad.
Oh,
yeah, exactly. You know,
could have been the sixth double. Could have replaced Weedy number five.
Barry.
Anyway.
Yes. I think, is that the
last? I think it's the last.
It's a long old podcast.
Is it, how often? How long
is it? Over an hour.
Oh, blimey. Right. Desert Island Flicks.
Oh, yes.
Biopunk films.
Biopunk. Genetic modification.
I've got to say, sorry. It could be a double agent. Could have been a double agent. It could have been like a double agent.
Keep saying
double,
it.
Double,
keep saying
double
it,
agent.
It
like it could have been like.
Desert Island Flick.
I'll cut that, Jane. This one.
Leave it. We should save these for future episodes.
Yeah.
It might be the saviour of many moments. You never know.
Okay.
So, what's the best biopunk for this? Is genetic splicing? This is kind of bad mankind messing with biology.
Yes, things you shouldn't.
And punk.
I know. Well, I think because in early discussions, Paul, I think you and I both had the same two thoughts.
Yeah. Well, so you have one or the other.
Well, you start.
I'd like The Fly, please.
Ah, yes. I saw a little bit of this on TV. Though.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, classic. Yeah. Actually, I'm surprised that no one has set about remaking
suggest it!
Well, it was a remake to start with.
Well, exactly. So they already remade the original. Well, and they've made it as good as possible. And
True, but I don't know. I mean, I'm intrigued. I'd be intrigued to see it with decent CGI rather than a big rubber suit.
Well, you're right.
Personally. Yeah. But yeah, but it is very,
very good though. But who could be better than Jeff Goldblum?
No, that is
very good.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, it could be good. I'd go with Jurassic Park. It's very
it's a winner.
One of the few was a proper full on blockbuster of this genre. But yeah, it's better. And there's rumours of a fourth.
Yeah.
They didn't really go downhill though, did they? I mean, were actually pretty good.
Jurassic Park 3. Popular wisdom is, it all went awful. And I don't think they did at all. The first one is obviously the best. But the second one has a lot of moments I like. And the third one isn't bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. So I'm surprised they then stopped. Because I wouldn't have thought the third one massively underperformed. But.
No, I didn't. I don't think that would be such a bad move, actually.
So I think there is a fourth one thought about at the moment.
Mm. Because it's on the list.
No, not at least.
It's a good reason.
We conjured this up from our brains.
I see that I spy in a space.
That's
and I am a girl. So if I'm going to pick a relatively boy-y
that's allowed.
Toppy,
that's a boy.
I'm going to go for in space because it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's great. It's cool.
I like the film on that. Carnosaur apparently is a biopunk. I'd like to see Carnosaur. It sounds quite fun, doesn't it?
And there was a series as well, so...
Carnosaur 2. This time it's Iggy Venkania.
Austin Powers hated.
Yes.
But yeah.
Right. So yeah, there you go.
Yes, that'll do. So, see you in the next 100.
Yeah, thank you for sticking with us for all the 100. If you haven't, go back and catch up. Because
they're all on the iTunes. At some point, I suppose they may not be on the iTunes. I don't know. Does iTunes have a limit, or does your server have a limit as to how many?
Server doesn't. I think it all depends on the feed. I think if we start cropping them off the end, but no, I think they're there. I think you can get them all.
Oh, they're there. Grab them while you can.
I'll try and remember to check. But if you try and go back to get the first one and then you can't, let me know, and I'll work out a way of publicising it.
Good job. There we are.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Yes. So have a good couple of weeks.
More shorts. Any emails? podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yeah. Tweet us @moviebanter and facebook.com/moviebanter.
Yeah.
And that's yours.
Till next time.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, it's broken.